Senators are going to race down the ice 2-on-2. Brown up the left side shoots. Riddick to save, and he swats the rebound into the near corner. Here's Brown, left point, Borowiecki, a shot tipped in front by Pageau and stopped by Riddick.
More quality work after a couple of Johnny Gaudreau turnovers. David Riddick saves the day.
And that is what David Riddick has done time and time again this season. So here's my question. Where would the Flames be without David Riddick this year? Right now leads the league in starts, minutes, shots, and saves, tied for second in wins, and his .915 save percentage puts him right in the middle of the pack for goalies with 10 or more starts. He's 16th in that respect at .915. But just try and think where this group would be without his work. I think he's been far better and far more important to his team than just the raw numbers would suggest. And even still, numbers have been solid, if not spectacular. They've been definitely solid for David Riddick. But boy, I shudder to think where they would be without his solid, consistent, night-in and night-out play this year.
I think we know more about Cam Talbot, safe to say.
Probably.
They've hardly used him. All the talk this summer about ideal workload split. I mean, this would be considered lunacy at this point to have it play out the way it has, but he's been that good, and they've been that shaky defensively, and the caliber of chance they've surrendered has been, not good. How many breakaways and odd man rushes that are completely born out of unnecessary turnovers have we seen from this club? It seems like almost every night there's that.
Yeah,
there's not a lot of rocking chair Reader's Digest victories for this goalie. He's had to make great saves in almost every game he's come into. He's been sensational. He's been their MVP in my mind. And, you know, we were the guys trumpeting that there's no great neat concern in net. Oh, the biggest question mark about the Flames are goaltending. Not for me, because this guy's been here. And every single year he's made strides, and all the people that know him better than all of us listening love this guy.
I just feel like, I mean, I don't think it's even close who has been their best player this year.
You could argue Matthew Tkachuk. I don't think you'd win. You could argue Elias Lindholm. You'd lose. It's exactly what you're saying. If you have to vote, like, it's not close.
Yeah. And he's been consistent, which is important. And I think he's been one of those guys that, with what he does and the way he plays and the type of personality he is, I think he's one of those guys that just gives you a little bit more confidence as a team knowing he's back there, because you know he's fiery. You know that he will sacrifice for the group. And I'm not even just talking about skating down the ice and almost getting into a goalie fight, or we almost got a goalie fight.
Yeah, the almost things don't count for much, to be fair. That would have been good, though.
Or, you know, face washing guys or getting into it after the whistle or slamming his stick on the net. It's not that as much as you just know this guy is not going to stop battling. And you know that when he makes a mistake or when he lets in a soft one, it's not going to rattle him. You know that, because every goaltender makes mistakes and every goaltender lets in a bad goal every once in a while. But you know that that's not going to rattle him. You know that he's going to potentially even battle harder than he already was if a bad one goes in. I just feel like his personality is exactly what you want on a team, too. And I think that that kind of radiates through the rest of the group right now.
Ultra competitive, great teammate, and team results ahead of personal results. If he wins 7-6, he's smiling coming off the ice. And if they lose 1-0 and he makes 50 saves, he's upset, not because of anything, you know, upset that the team lost. I think there's a lot to love about the character. And what he's proven, Pat, is that he's absolutely number one netminder in this league. I don't think you can debate that anymore. The only thing people can rest on in an argument that he hasn't proven that is that he had a rough second half last year, and that'd be completely ignoring an injury so significant that he didn't get to play in his neighboring country in the World Championships for his home nation.
I know that there are some in the Flames that are still, they want to see what happens in the second half. They're very excited about what they've seen so far and very optimistic, but I do know that they still want to see what he can do over a full season, because that is still somewhat of an unknown. But everything that you have seen to this point leads you to believe that it'll be just fine. It's funny, Ryan Pike earlier today says, you know, the way that, kind of to your point, goes, when he wins, it's all on the team. It's all how well the team played in front of him. When the team loses, it's all his fault.
Shouldn't and, let and that he one takes in.
And,
sure.
and you know, I think that that's probably a little unfair to him, but I think it's exactly the type of personality and the type of guy that you want.
How do you not love that?
If you're in that locker room, how can you not want to do everything you can to get that guy wins right now?
The only thing I will say, how many brutal puck handling goals against have there been?
Many.
Like 4 or 5?
I can count 3 right off the top of my head.
In the last couple of weeks alone, probably. So that's one area where I still say, less is more. Less is more.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you need to find a leash and you can put it, you know, like to the back of his belt on his hockey pants and into the back of the middle of the net, and he's not allowed to come behind the goal line to play pucks, I'm fine with that. That's how dicey it's been. I think he's nowhere near league average at handling the puck, and I think he really wants to be great, which is a great personality trait. But that's not going to be a strength ever, I'm going to guess. And it's the only negative thing I can say about him.
Well, I will say, you can get better at it. You can. And you I look at Mika Kiprusoff, and when he entered this league, and Rob used to say this all the time, and he's bang on. Kipper entered this league as a horrid puck handler. He could not do it. He finished his time in the league in his last 4 or 5 years. He wasn't Ben Bishop. He wasn't Mike Smith. He wasn't Carey Price. He wasn't Marty Brodeur.
Marty Turco. There's a puck handling goaltender.
But he was good at it. He was proficient at it. And he turned it into something that was part of his repertoire. And I think that's what a good player does. He improves on the weaknesses while not. So
There's a long way to go.
And
what I would say right at this juncture is that less is more, and that while he might become a good puck handler way down the road in his career, he has to stop trying to be a really good puck handler every game he plays.
Yeah, risk aversion is like probably the way to
2 minutes left in a game, he's coming out to play stuff, and I'm like, why in the world now are you doing this?
See, like, if he wants to keep, like, yeah, you know what? Go out, cut off those rims behind the net, make the safe outlet pass.
Stop it behind the net and go back in.
I don't know if you need to be going out and playing it in front of your net and trying those outlet passes and that type of stuff.
Well, and there's one early against Ottawa.
The chutzpah is nice, but...
There's one on Saturday where he grabs it and zips it out to the neutral zone immediately, but it ends up on the wrong stick, and then it's another half minute of the top line chasing the Senators in the Flames zone. If you just leave that for a D, what are the chances that outlet pass ends up on a Flames stick? Way better than 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a segment where we're supposed to be talking about how great he's been, and we've been his biggest boosters stretching way back into his early AHL days. Not to pump our own tires, but to just underline how much of fans we are of this human and his potential as a elite netminder in this league. But that's the only area I can even start to moan about performance, because it's just something he's not good at.
Here's the other interesting part about David Rittich, who is the second star of the NHL week, by the way. He leads the NHL in starts, minutes, shots, and saves. Here's Jordan Sigalette, Flames goaltending coach, joined us on the postgame show on Saturday, talked about how Rittich is handling a workload he's never seen before in his career.
He's been open and honest with us if he's tired, which is good. Like the other day in Buffalo, I asked him if he wanted a morning skate. We had an optional, and he said he didn't. So I think it's huge like that when you can get a road goalie to go in there and see some shots and give him the rest. And, you know, we put together a good effort that night too. So it's just managing the work-rest ratio, and we're definitely going to get Talbs in there a little bit more here soon. We sat down with both of them yesterday, so just kind of set a plan moving forward, because we need both guys going, and David's going to need some rest.
So that's Jordan Sigalette from Saturday. Now, Kleiner, I haven't seen a lot of signs of fatigue myself, but you've looked at it a little differently. You've maybe seen a couple of holes in that armor where maybe you think fatigue for Rittich has played in a little bit.
Yeah, he's not doubled over and exhausted, but just the goal against Pageau the other night, it's a great shot, but he's going the wrong way. And the misplay of the puck that leads directly to a goal. There have just been a couple examples, and a lot of times it really is only one or two in each game, where it's like there just seems like there's a blip in the focus, and I wonder if that is because of the amount that he is playing. I think you need to start working Talbot a little bit more now and give him, if nothing, if not physical, a bit of a mental break, because I see a couple cracks every night that it's like, maybe give this guy a couple more days off and those don't happen.
I haven't seen the fatigue the same way, but that's fair observation from Klein. Well, where are you on that?
The other clip you'd played from Sigelite earlier today was talking about how they've given him some...
The same one. He said it there, yeah.
The optional mornings. Like, they understand that this workload's not what they wanted, but that you also have to respect the work the guy's given you. Like, you can't just turn away from the caliber of net money they've been getting. They open a 6-game and 9-night stretch on Thursday. 6-10, either way. Depends how you kill the days. I think we're going to see a couple Talbots in there, minimum. And it's two middling at best opponents remaining on this homestand. It's a back-to-back on the road early next week. I think it's only a matter of time before we start to see more Talbot, but it's the same challenge that they've had all season in trying to get Cam Talbot in. A, Riddick's rolling so well, you don't want to take it away from him. B, the caliber chances they've been bleeding haven't been very high.
And it's B for me that's really important, because the way the team is playing in front of David Riddick hasn't been consistent or high level for the most part. And I think if you're the Flames, you're just so worried about, we got to get our game in order. You can convince yourself almost every single night, save a couple of back-to-backs. You can convince yourself every single night that it's a Riddick night to start.
And that's
what's
going to
be really, exactly. That's what's going to be really interesting to see, if they can avoid that pattern or avoid that inclination to just say, oh, we need him again. We got to go to Riddick. Because they're walking a really fine line and trying to strike a very delicate balance of, we need our best guy in, and it's hard to sit your best guy who's been Riddick, and we also need him fresh for the playoffs. And you're trying to strike that balance. Because right now, they're not a guaranteed playoff team.
Nope.
But at the same time, you want your guy to be ready and not fatigued and in as good a spot as possible to have success once you get there.
So there's two sort of pots you're trying to put goodwill in.
Exactly.
One is the let's be ready for the playoffs, but the other is like, oh, we got to get into the playoffs.
Yeah, you don't want him begged because you played him 30 times before Christmas, and then all of a sudden after Christmas you found your game, but now you have a number one goalie who's just mentally and physically exhausted.
Yeah,
the nightmare scenario is you play the crap out of him and you get in and he's bagged, and the opposite is you went to Talbot a few too many times, you got too many L's and you missed, but a healthy and rested Riddick, there's no playoffs for him. Those would be the nightmare scenarios, so flip those upside down for the best-case scenarios. The standings is the big one for me. This division is not that good in the sense that there's a lot of teams competing, but no one's running away and hiding. There isn't a Washington or an Islanders or a Boston in this division. Yep. They're just flying. They're only 7 points out with, 50 games to play, a little more than that. So once they're in a spot where they're a little more comfortable in the standings, I think we're going to see much closer to a 50-50 split.
And just in fairness to Cam Talbot, because it does sound like we're kind of, I don't want to say mocking him, but it does sound
protect
like we're down
Talbot,
on him.
Protect Talbot.
Yeah, like, he's been fine. There have been a couple.
Riddick's been better, but he's been
totally
fine.
Yeah, there have been no problems with how Cam Talbot's playing. It's just Riddick's playing at team MVP level.
Yeah.
That's the reason we're having this conversation. It's not a lack of trust in Cam Talbot, it's just a much more trust in David Riddick.
Okay, round the table.
Are Cam Talbot's numbers fine? Because we keep saying he's fine. He's got a 323 and an 893.
He's had a couple.
Those aren't good numbers.
That Vegas game, though, is going to completely blow up his numbers.
Riddick's had a couple of those, too.
Well, he's also played more, so the one bad game affects it a little less.
100%. It's just that we could keep saying it's fine, but the team keeps going out of the way to protect them in terms of, like, well, we got to make sure we're a little better before we get him in. I don't know.
Well, and that speaks to the fact that Riddick has been better.
Yeah, and it also speaks to the fact you probably wouldn't take 893 net money if you have the choice. Now, I think he's been better than those numbers, but those still are the numbers, right?
Here's my final thought around the table. My answer to this is just my guess. Yes. Does Talbot start against the Sabres on Thursday? My guess is yes. Klein?
Yes.
I think it's one of the two. I don't know if it's Buffalo necessarily.
But one of the two, Buffalo or LA?
Yeah, because I think
both bad. I mean,
he's going to get one of the back-to-backs.
One's a bad team and one's a struggling
ahead of
team.
That. And there's, Toronto, Carolina are two really good clubs coming in a week and a half from now. Or we can change. Those are not necessarily screaming
backups.
Get Talbot in. Yeah. But one of the next two, I just don't know that it's Buffalo. Buffalo, I thought, played pretty well, all things considered, midweek against them. Just beat the Leafs. They, I think that's a better club than the Kings, but the flip side of that argument is they've lost twice already to the Kings. You can't keep overlooking the Kings, so You might be right.
7 o'clock face-off Thursday against the Buffalo Sabres.